It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 486. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended, on demand, through firewalls. Try it free by clicking the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can send me an email. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. Follow me on Facebook. You can like the Mike Tech Show page at MikeNationNet. On Facebook. We also have the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all the past shows, the audio, great resource for the Mike Tech Show. This is very important that I address last week's show because I made some mistakes and I got to correct them. First, I want to apologize to the Spiceworks community. Last week, I read an email from Brent asking about RAID. And I went off because he quoted people from the Spiceworks community that they don't like RAID 5, and what did I think? And I went off, I'm going to be honest, and there's no malice here. I have not participated in the Spiceworks community, nor really knew anything about the, I mean, I know of the software, but I never realized anything about the Spiceworks forums for IT professionals. And I went off on that I'm right and that RAID 5 all the way, rah-rah. This is no excuse, and there's no excuse for my knee-jerk reaction to that email last week. There was no malice or on my part. There was no bad intentions. I did not mean to call anybody out, and I certainly don't know anybody over there, and it was a knee-jerk reaction that was very, very bad on my part, and I sincerely apologize. Next, this is no excuse. I've been away from the corporate world for 5 years, and my opinion on RAID is not valid because I have not done the research. I've been hanging on to RAID 5 for years because that's how it's been. That's what I've been using. That's how I set up all the servers. Managed it, never had problems with it. RAID 10 is definitely better performance and far superior and more redundant and offers more redundancy. And I did not give that any credit last week, and I should have. I still do not have the knowledge to properly address RAID, and that's something that I need to take on myself and learn more about that, and I will. My biggest clients right now are small businesses that are my bread and butter for my business, for doing IT support for small companies, and they have one server. I have one client that has two. And even the four servers that I rolled out in the previous 18 months, RAID 5 was okay for that, at least in my world and in my knowledge and what I was working with. They're not doing anything that's taxing it, that's pushing it to performance levels where anything's noticeable. But in a corporate environment, every case, and I should have spent more time saying the following, which is you have to look at everything at a case-by-case basis. You need to examine what software are you running, what operating system, the hardware, what controller are you using. What server are you using? What is the software manufacturer's recommendation for storage? What's the hardware? What is the best optimal settings that are recommended from the RAID controller manufacturer? All of these need to be looked at a case-by-case basis, and we shouldn't globally answer anything, and I certainly should not have globally answered a RAID question, or for that matter, any question that's posed to me. Please accept my apology. I promise I will do better at controlling my emotions and not doing a knee-jerk reaction to any email, regardless of what it is. And I certainly shouldn't have done that. Now, I know over in the forums, a lot of people were leading that I did that in order to gain more listeners. I've been doing this for 9 years. Certainly, I would always love new listeners, but I would never do anything like that. I never have and never would, just to gain listenership. And I would never do that at the expense of my listeners who come here every week and subscribe to my podcast to take my technical advice and use it. And I would never mislead anyone and misrepresent anything in order to do something like gaining listeners. That would never happen, never even remotely entered into my mind, and I would never do something like that. It was a poorly managed knee-jerk reaction to an email where I looked at myself as an expert, and my problem, I've been away too long from the corporate world to make that type of assessment so fierce and so hard. And again, I certainly didn't mean to offend anyone. Please accept my apology, and we're moving on. Let's get to some email here. This is from Steven, and he says, thanks. Hi, Mike. I was just catching up on a few of your latest shows and had a few comments and questions. Thanks for your recommendation on Synology products. Based on your praise for their products, we added a DS712 about a year ago at work, and I love it. It is easy to set up and very configurable. File access and transfer is very fast. We purchased a second one using your Amazon link for off-site backup. I like them so much, I bought a DS212 for home and use it for family photos, videos, and streaming my music via the mobile apps. The photo station is great for sharing photos and videos with family and friends. The recommendation is very much appreciated. I'd like to throw in my vote for ESET antivirus products. I switched to ESET for our work machines back when the standard antivirus program, Norton, McAfee, were taking up nearly 10% of system resources under Windows 2000 and Vista. The biggest reason for the switch back then was that ESET was written in assembly language, took up very little resources, and was extremely fast. We have about 15 computers protected with the Smart Security Suite, and I've had no issues with the exception of a few issues with the firewall that are easily handled. I've been very happy with it, and the real-time scans of email, files downloading, and blocking of potentially dangerous websites has been very effective for us. We've been using it for over 6 years, and I highly recommend it. The system right behind me, if you're watching the video or watching me live, is running the ESET Security Suite. I've been running that now for over a month, and I'm making sure before I make a recommendation on ESET, now I'm taking everything into account, all your comments, all the recommendations, and right now it's been running very, very well. It's not interfering with me doing my regular work on the system, and it's been pretty secure along with what Steven is recommending here. We are moving to a bigger office, and I'll be adding some equipment. I'll need to pick up another HP ProCurve and was shopping on Amazon. I was looking at picking up another 1810-24G switch and was surprised at the range of prices, $175 to $290, even $500 depending on the vendor. Should I be cautious of a price being too low and potentially counterfeit? Do you have any Amazon vendors that you regularly use and could recommend? Not really. I mean, I buy from Monoprice, Newegg, and Amazon. Here's what you can't lose with Amazon. And this just happened to me for a gift for my youngest son. I purchased an item and a completely different item arrived 2 days ago. I mean, not even remotely close. And it was not from Amazon, although shipped from Amazon. I called up Amazon. They took care of it right away, immediately gave me a refund, and I can now send back the misshipped item. Are you ready for this? Yesterday, Amazon shipped me the item at no cost overnight as a thank you for my business. Could you imagine that? Customer service sent me the item that I was supposed to get. That's the kind of service you get from Amazon. Steven, don't be afraid. If you're buying from Amazon, you're still protected by them. So even if it is a low price, even if it is a low price, the one thing you're looking for, is it used? Is it, you know, make sure that it's new and that it's, you know, factory sealed and in mint condition when you receive it, turn it on, set it up. And if you get that at a good price, and I've done that on a couple of those HP Pro Curves, when I see that, I'll kind of be looking at Amazon, and I'll regularly do that, where if I see it very inexpensive, something, I'll buy it. I'm not afraid to buy from them. Other places, I might be afraid because their customer service just isn't as superior as it is with Amazon. I've never had a bad experience with Amazon. I only have great stories, and it's not just because they're an affiliate of mine. He goes on, one last question. We have been using an old consumer-level router as a wireless access point in our office. It's on our first floor, and access upstairs is sketchy, and it's a pretty small office. We have it for clients to use when they come in and for smartphones, and sometimes with a laptop or two when they aren't docked. So it is not mission critical. It's not mission critical item, and we don't see a lot of traffic. We'll be moving to a bigger office with three floors, less than 2,000 square feet per floor. I think I can centrally locate a high-powered access point on the middle floor and have us covered. If not, I can add another or repeater and adjuster locations. If you can recommend any brands or models of access points you have, I looked into the open mesh products. Yes, one of your listeners recommended it, and that looks very tempting as well. My biggest concern is security and being able to separate out our guest access that only has internet access versus employee access that can access our networks and files. Thanks, Mike. The information you share with us has been invaluable to me. I promise my next email will be shorter. Steve, don't worry about that. Okay, I want you to look into Aruba Networks for their wireless solutions. They have small, medium, large solutions where you can have a central controller, and now you're putting access points that can handle multiple SIDs and multiple security settings. Check that out and see if it's with your price point for what you want to roll out. Give that a try, and they'll certainly point you to a local distributor or local dealer that you can work with. This is from Kate. This is a long one that was a couple weeks ago, and I'm just getting to this, Kate, and I apologize because there's just been so much going on. This is comments and requests for help. Hi, Mike. I have a couple things piled up here, and I hope you and your listeners might be able to help me with. And one thing that might be of help to someone out there. First, the potentially helpful thing. Internet Explorer 11 on Windows 7 64-bit machines seems to break YouTube. Has anyone else noticed this? I had a customer tell me his YouTube was broken. Okay, this should be easy, I thought, as I got in the car. He's going to need an update, something like Java or Adobe Flash Player, or enable something that a security program set to super paranoid mode. Nope. YouTube videos would play for a second or two, and then the whole YouTube page would freeze. We had to end the task to get out of there. I installed Firefox and everything worked fine. at that point, it dawned on me to see what version of IE he's been using. I found out it was IE 11, and the box to enable automatic updates, IE help about, was checked. Then I searched on Google and found hundreds of thousands of posts starting a few days earlier about the same problem. No fix at that point from Microsoft, because at that point, no real acknowledgement from Microsoft. Suggested workaround was to roll back to IE 10 and uncheck that auto update box. Just shoot me. By the way, I've had to uninstall IE 11, not only for, this is the first I'm hearing about the YouTube, but I ran into other problems with clients trying to get to sites that involve financial information and security. Not good. Had to uninstall IE 11. And then, of course, for a whole segment of clients that are financial advisors, I have to uninstall IE 10 and IE 9. Yes, I have a group of clients that can only have IE 8. And I don't know how long they're holding out for that. I think the parent company is finally supporting IE 9 for their software. So we'll be able to let IE 9 go. What I did for this guy was leave Firefox installed and put the main YouTube page he wanted to go to as his homepage and leave a shortcut on the desktop. I left IE as a default browser because that's how he wanted to roll. This all happened a couple of weeks ago. Has anyone noticed a fix? Next, a couple of questions for help. I made a house call yesterday to get an ASUS transformer with Windows 8.1 on it set up so it could share SkyDrive with the customer's desktop running Windows 8. Someone had a go at setting it up before I got there, and instead of signing in with her existing Microsoft account, the customer had created a local account. Well, hey, you can't sync SkyDrive like that. I know how to convert a local account to Microsoft account in Windows 8. And she has a link here. The steps are similar in Windows 8.1. I followed the standard procedure several times. At each time, I got an error. We're sorry, but something went wrong. Your account wasn't changed to this Microsoft account. Code 0x800B0101. Well, thanks, Microsoft, for making all of these Windows 8 messages so whimsical that really improved my mood. However, there doesn't seem to be a fix for this. I made sure the system clock was correct. I tried just adding the account instead of converting it. I enabled the hidden administrator account, first part of this article, and went through all that again with the same result. And then, yes, I disabled it when I was through. It seems like the only thing to do this is to refresh the Windows install and see if that corrects the problem. There is apparently no information to suggest it will or won't. It's a crapshoot. And the customer didn't want me to do that. Instead, she was going to take the transformer back to where she bought it and have them sort it out. I can see her point, but I doubt she'll be able to tell me how they fixed it, if they fix it at all. I'd love to know if anyone else has encountered this and whether they solved it. Finally, one of my readers is blind and used a hideously expensive screen reader program called Jaws on his XP computer. He is concerned about the end of XP support next year and wants to know how other blind, visually impaired people are finding Jaws on Windows 8. I know there are reviews and YouTube videos about this, and I've directed him there, but I am also looking for actual comments from people who need it or from people like us who support it. Also, if there is an alternative that's worth considering, I'd be happy to pass that along to him. Thanks so much for your help, Mike, and passing this along to your listeners. I know for a fact I have a few blind listeners who've written into me in the past, and I'd like to know, what operating system are you using Jaws with? That would be great advice, so I can share that with the community of anybody who has any kind of vision problem. What's working with Windows 8? that you recommend that doesn't break the bank. I think that's what we're looking for here, so thank you. This is Unchecky. Ron sent this in, and it's a link for a program that automatically clears toolbar checkboxes on installer dialogs. And it's in beta, and it's called Unchecky. So check that out. Thank you very much, Ron. This is from Ian. Hi, Mike. Just like to say how much I enjoy podcasts. Been listening to you and Carrie, but haven't heard much about XP ending in April 2014. Wow, we've covered that a lot. I guess it's been a while since I brought it up, so we're going to do that right now. I am not technically minded, but I think a lot of people would wonder if after Microsoft ends support for XP, will I still be able to access the internet? Oh, absolutely. I'm going to tell you what the problem is. And just use the sites I know to be trusted and, well, extra security software, i.e. Malwarebytes, Hitman, and Super Any Spyware, protect me enough to still be able to use the internet without Microsoft updates. Thanks, Mike, for your help. Ian, here's the situation. You're not going to be getting any more security updates or patches from Microsoft. If you cannot upgrade from XP, you definitely want to build in a layer of protection. I would make sure that I'm using my browser is consistently patched. So I would turn to Chrome and Firefox and make sure you're constantly updating those, updating all of your software, updating Adobe Flash, your Java. Make sure you're using a strong antivirus program like an ESET. Make sure you're using Malwarebytes Pro. Will that guarantee you? We don't know. And we don't know at what state the operating system is going to be after April for those holes that are still left unpatched and unaddressed by Microsoft and XP, and what kind of exploits are going to be used by people to penetrate and get to your system and compromise your system. We don't know. My recommendation is to do everything you can to try to upgrade to Windows 7. And if resources and things can't happen, then yes, you're going to be rolling the dice, taking your chances. Is it the gloom and doom, end of the world? No. I mean, you're still going to be able to access the internet. You're going to be able to get the website. You're going to get your email. But there's a risk, and we don't know what that is until April, and we don't know what exploits are going to be left unpatched by Microsoft. You are taking a greater risk by continuing to use XP. This is from Michael. Hope all is well. Listening to show 485 and boot times on Windows 8 and 8.1, of course, I have had very little issues and have experienced long boot times until I came across a tweak that seems to speed up boot times for a few seconds. Try this tweak and see if it works, and it also works in Windows 7. First, from the Run box, bring up msconfig. Next, check on the Boot tab. Next, go to Advanced Options. On the left-hand side, check the box that says Number of Processors. Use the pull-down menu to let the system use all of the cores available on boot up. Hit OK and apply, and you should be faster on boot up, as it will run multiple processes on different cores on startup. Hope this helps. I read about this tweak on one of my PC Magazine websites a long time ago, and it seems to help. You can judge for yourself and see if it's worth the time to make the change. Keep up the great work. It can't hurt, because I know boot times, well, on any operating system, depending on the hardware, and there's so many variables, certainly is going to vary. And what I've mentioned was my own experience with my laptop going from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1. There was a significant increase in boot time, and I was very unhappy about that. And a lot of you have agreed and have sent in. As you know, I've read a lot of emails, and there's been lots of discussion on going from 8 to 8.1 and how things have gotten worse. Not for everybody, but for a lot of people. This is a tweak that certainly can't hurt to try. That's it for tonight's show. I do have some music, and since this is the last show before Christmas, a couple things. First, I want to thank everybody for an incredible year and for supporting the Mike Tech Show, and for the holidays and for all the time, in using my Amazon link, amazon.mikenation.net. Thank you so much. Your price stays the same, but it really helps support the show, and I greatly appreciate you using my Amazon link, and continue to do so this weekend for last-minute purchases. And if you can't think of anything, hey, you know, an Amazon gift card's a great gift, and it's easy and quick to get. Every year, for the last show before Christmas, I play this song. It's my favorite Christmas song, and I can't help it. I gotta play it. Give a listen. This is from the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. It's a Christmas canon. Give a listen. I'll be back when it's finished, and we'll wrap up.
This night we pray, our lives will show this street.
That is A Christmas Canon by the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and I'll have a link in the show notes where you can purchase that directly from Amazon. I want to take a moment and thank everybody for supporting the Mike Tech Show. I really appreciate it. If you're celebrating Christmas next week, have a great Merry Christmas, a safe, happy holiday. I'll be back the 26th, so December 26th, the day after Christmas. So I'll be here Thursday night, same time, same channel. Have a great holiday, everybody. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.